I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. It is busier than it has ever been. Can you imagine the things that we're seeing coming our way? So for a second, let's talk about life and death, okay? We got this coronavirus. Is this really something that's going to kill us? Is this going to be the one that wipes us out? Is this the heralding in of the apocalypse? I don't know. We know human bodies are frail, and we are prone to disease. Disease can take us out very easily. I mean, we all know very, very healthy people that can get hit with a disease out of the blue, and in a very short period of time, it can take them out. You know, that's one of the frailties of the flesh. But this coronavirus, I don't know. It sounds to me, you know, and I don't want to put a conspiracy hat on, but I do want to say that it seems to me, coming from Wuhan, China, that it most likely was some type of a virus created in a military facility to be used as a weapon. Now, the bad part about, you know, these kind of weapons, disease-based weapons, is that unless you have a really specific disease and you can inoculate all of your people to it, and for sure it really works, releasing any kind of a thing like that is a risky effect, because the virus, the disease, does not know the difference between an American soldier and a Chinese soldier. It simply attacks human bodies. But I think it's interesting that it came from Wuhan, China, and we know there are military facilities there. These things go on all the time. We'd be naive not to think people aren't working on chemical weapons and laser weapons, and they have weapons that are made of sound. You know, you can have sound. You ever drive past a car or have a car drive past you that's got a really heavy-duty bass pumping out of it? You know, boom, boom, and you can feel that. You know, and those are sound waves. Well, they have weapons made of sound waves that can disrupt your hearing. They can disrupt you can get sick to your stomach from certain vibrations they can send at you. It's very interesting, the things that are out there. But this coronavirus, right now, at this point in America, we have 6 people who have died of the coronavirus. Now, most of them have impaired physical abilities. You know, they were sick already, they were elderly, or they had immune systems that were disabled or weakened. That's not uncommon. I mean, people that suffer those kind of conditions are often taken out very easily by one of these things that come along. Look at the regular flu. Now, I know a lot of people have talked about it, but the regular flu has already infected how many millions of us Americans, just here in America? Millions of people have been hit by the flu, and thousands of people die almost every day of the regular flu, whatever, you know, flu A or flu B, whatever it is that's coming around. The regular influenza kills hundreds of thousands of people worldwide every year. What's scary about this coronavirus is that we really don't know it completely. Now, the coronavirus is part of a family of viruses. See, I didn't know that, but I found that out. The coronavirus is a family of viruses that react a certain way with human bodies. What the hell are these viruses, though? Did you ever give that any thought? You know, are they from alien places? You know, did they come here on meteorites, you know, millions of years ago? I don't know. Or are they just another form of life meant to be part of the balance of life, you know, to keep the population in tow? I don't know. I don't know. It's possible. Very interesting, though, the fear that the media is whipping up for this. I mean, they really are whipping this into a fear. And how does that make any sense? Why would they do that? Well, clearly, because it's something they can punch the president over. You know, he's not doing enough. He's not doing enough. Look what's happening. People are going to die. Because you know what? This thing, I don't know if it's going to get to the point of the regular flu. You know, we don't go crazy over the regular flu, do we? And we lose, you know, thousands of people every year. Young children, older people, and sometimes, you know, middle-year healthy people die from the flu. But those are thousands and thousands of people that die every year. And we're not going crazy over that. You know, here we have something that has killed 6 people so far. 6. Each one is a tragedy to their families and to our nation. To lose anybody to a disease is a horrible thing. But this thing probably will ramp up a bit, you know, as most diseases go. It's scary because, you know, you got to have contact. Are you breathing into the air? You know, they have a couple of people that they said didn't travel anywhere, and all of a sudden they have this virus. Where'd they get it from? Well, you're always going to find out that they came in contact with somebody. The incubation period, as I understand it, is a week or so. So how many people do you come across in a week? You know, imagine in New York City, how many people you come across. There's millions of people in New York City just walking down the street. You come across millions of people. And who's sneezing, who's coughing, who's, you know. I'm a big handshaker. I like to shake people's hand because I like to feel your hand. I like to connect right with you. That's scary, man. You know how many germs can get on you from handshaking? Because you don't realize you shake somebody's hand. You don't know where that hand has been, right? And then you got their germs on your hand. We don't think much of it. But then you go to lunch. Man, you better wash your hands before you eat. Because if you don't, you're taking whatever germs those people had on their hands, put on your hands. Now you put it on your hamburger, put it in your mouth. Scary stuff. You know, humans are a little disgusting sometimes, right? But I see this being ramped up by the media. Because they're trying to make a point that Trump is not a good leader. The fact that, I think it was MSNBC, one of them said, this is Trump's Katrina. They are itching for anything they can pin on this guy because he is winning so much. Winning, 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 winning. Isn't that what he told us he was going to do? And they are itching to find anything they can say. This is Trump's Katrina. Those people all died because he did nothing. A release came out the other day, and they were saying which countries in the world are most prepared to deal with this coronavirus as it becomes an outbreak. The number one country in the world that is prepared to deal with this coronavirus is the United States. There's a rating system they use for this, and I think we were like 76.3% prepared. The next one down was the UK, and they were like 72%. You know, the numbers are a little bit off. It might have been higher for us and, you know, different for UK. But China was down in the 50s, like 52% ready for this. So to say that, you know, Trump missed the boat on this, he really wasn't paying attention because he doesn't care about you, you see? He's just trying to use you. This is the impression that they're still trying to put out there, and they're using this disease, and they're scaring people over it terribly. So don't be afraid. Wash your hands, you know, high five in the air, fist bump if you have to. We got to take precautions. You know, I know at a lot of churches, my church including, you know, on Sunday we have the bread and the wine, the bread and the blood of Jesus. You know, that's what our thing doing there. We've stopped passing the cup around, you know, just to get through flu season, for regular flu season. A lot of elderly people in the church, and, you know, you have to make some compensations there. Now, I don't mean to get off the beaten path, but a friend of mine who's not a Catholic, doesn't go to that kind of church, he says, hey, listen, if that's the blood of Jesus, then how can you get disease from it? You know, and I said, you thought you got me there, didn't you? Well, you didn't. It's not from the blood of Jesus, the wine and the cup you would get it from. It's from the cup itself. It's on, the germs are on the cup. See? So there you go. You think you're being a wise guy trying to attack God. You can't. So if we take the proper precautions, we keep an eye on this thing, and we don't panic, hopefully we can get through the season. You know, there's an ebb and fall to all these diseases. They rise up. Remember the swine flu was going to get us all? Then the bird flu. Holy moly. SARS. You know, you can go through the list of them. That, you know, every time they're going to get us. The reality is, through the course of human history, there are killer waves of disease that have wiped out millions of people. Does that mean we can't come across that? No, we have modern medicine. We have modern technology. You know, people are working on a coronavirus inoculation right now. The Israelis think they have one pretty close. I read the other day some American scientists think they're pretty close. You know, so we have that going for us, that we're in this modern age of technology and medicine. But at the same time, you see how this thing can get out of control. You see how fast it can go. So there's all kinds of concerns. So I just wanted to address it because I don't think we should panic over it. I'm not saying it's not a big deal. It is obviously a big deal, especially for the people that get it. Now, there are 6 deaths in our country. Well, how many people did they come in contact with? Is that going to be more people? I hope no one else gets sick and dies from this, but it's something we need to consider. Now, the ramifications of the panic. You know, and I don't know. I don't know if this is really going through the minds of our friends on the left as they make this panic. But what has happened? What a significant effect has this had, other than you and your family members getting the coronavirus, which none of us have, except for those six people on the West Coast. How else, though, have we been directly affected by the coronavirus? What about the stock market taking huge drops? Right? Now, we're in a pretty good place. The stock market is pretty high up. Business is really going well. The economy is booming along. But we've taken some big, you know, 800 points, 900 point hits a couple days in a row. It's actually, you know, people have lost money. My father-in-law has money in stock. And he's like, you know how much money I lost? This thing went down. I said, I understand that. But if the stock market goes down and people start to panic over this, the economy could slow. Now, who does that benefit? Who is out there saying what we need is a good recession to get rid of Trump? I think those are the left-wing comedians on the late-night shows, right? They're all saying a good recession would slow him down because then people would bail out on him. They would bail out on him if the economy goes. So I don't want to say that's a conspiracy that our fellow Americans would really subscribe to, but I've actually heard them say it. So I can't say that they wouldn't say those kind of things, all right? For all of us, let's just say a prayer for our country, prayer for anybody who gets sick, wash our hands, and hope that our scientists and our medical community can get a good handle on this. The last thought I had on that, though, was the president appointed Michael Pence as the leader of the anti-coronavirus task force or whatever. And I've heard some people saying, why would you appoint the vice president? Why wouldn't you appoint a medical guy? Well, you know what? I'm pretty sure it's not Mike Pence in a lab with a lab coat on mixing some vials of disease. I'm sure Mike Pence is the administrator of this as a competent individual, and I believe he is a competent individual. He is going to be the leader of the team that's going to bring the medical people in with the scientific people and work on this. And you have a competent leader then leading the task force. It doesn't have to be a doctor. Right? If I was going to work on highways, do I have to get a guy that puts tar down on the road to be in charge of how we're going to do that project? No, of course not. You get an engineer from whatever the discipline you think you need that knows about building, and you put them in charge of it, and then they go get the great guys and girls that can put down the tar and make the roads really well. So I think it's really kind of the same thing here. Mike Pence is going to be the guiding force with this. He's going to monitor it. He's going to manage it and supervise it. So for all those people out there that are saying he should have picked a doctor, see how incompetent he is, you really have to rethink, you know, your whole thought pattern, because you guys really just are looking for any. It's that Trump derangement syndrome is really, that's a disease you should worry about. I mean, that disease has got you bad, and it's hard for you to function in the real world. You're so upset, and so getting rid of the idea of getting rid of this guy. Okay, take it easy, take a deep breath. His first term is almost over. You have a long way to go with his second term. So you want to pace yourself with your craziness and your ugly talk and your theories and your plans to try and attack the guy. How about just enjoy the economy, hope for the best for your country, show a little patriotism, and if you have a candidate that has better ideas, people will vote for them, and then you can remove him. But right now, if you don't like his tweeting, you don't like the things he says, you don't like his past history, but the economy's booming, the country is stronger, people have jobs that didn't have them before, we should all be happy for that. And if you have a candidate that comes up with a better idea, then that person's ideas will be the ones the American people will choose in November, and we will pick that person to be president. Man or woman, doesn't make a difference. You know, say, look at Bernie. Bernie's, you know, considered probably going to be the Democrat candidate. Bernie, look what Bernie's going to do for us. Look what he's going to do for our economy, okay? He's going to tax the hell out of us. He is going to take over some parts of industry. He is going to give us single-payer, government-induced health care. No one's going to pay for college. Everyone's going to get to go to college for free. He's going to have open borders, mass immigration of anyone who wants to come here to get the free college, you know, and to get all the benefits that we're going to be giving out left and right. That's what Bernie's going to do for us. Boy, why wouldn't we vote for that? I don't know. Let's think about that for a minute. what kind of college education are you really going to get? What are they going to do? Where are they going to pay those professors from? I guess they're going to keep taxing us. Do you want to get taxed into oblivion? I mean, you want to pay 80% of your pay so that you can have free, inadequate health care? Because that's what it'll be. You know, I think Michael Bloomberg kind of clued us into that, didn't he? Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, for those people who don't know him, he's the soda guy who wants to tell you how much soda you can drink and if you should put salt on your food, and, you know, he wants to tell you how to live. Yeah, so Mike Bloomberg, this is the guy that said, you know, you come in, you're 95 years old and you need prostate surgery. We're going to tell you, go home. We're not going to give that to you. You're 95. Go live your life. Right? Do you think that's the way to go, folks? That's who we should be picking? Because that's one of our choices, right? Then we have Joe Biden. Now, Joe Biden seems like a good old boy, you know, from back in the day. I'm really concerned about him, you know? I mean, I'm sure his family loves him. But his wife, you think she would go to him and say, Joe, you can't remember where you are. You don't remember what state you're in. You don't know what you're running for. You don't know what job your son had. You really look bad out there. You look frail. You look old. You look tired, man. You look like this isn't good. Why don't we just enjoy the last years of our lives together and go and do traveling? And why don't they do all that? You know, they got tons of money. You know, he's got tons of money. They could do that. Is it that they think that he deserves this? You know, maybe as a family, because I was considering that today. Would my family tell me, hey, Joe, maybe it's time you pack up the microphone. You're doddering, you're drooling on yourself. You don't know what show you're on. You're confusing yourself every minute. You know, maybe you should just say, boy, that was a lot of fun, that chasing justice, but maybe you should come in off the ledge there, you know what I mean, and take a little break. Would I think my family would do that? I think they probably would, but at the same time, maybe they think I worked really hard to get here, and this could be my shot to become the next Rush Limbaugh, and I should really push at it hard, because I deserve it, and they want me to have it. So I like to think that maybe Biden's family's looking at it that way. He's given his whole life to politics. They believe he's done the right thing for Delaware and for the United States, and it's his turn. You know, what a crowning glory would be for him and for their family for him to be elected president of the United States. Now, he would have to have somebody with him every minute, you know, kind of like that Weekend at Bernie's movie, you know, talking. The vice president probably would have to do a lot of extra work. Even Biden himself said he'd have to pick a really great vice president because, you know, he's old, he might not make it. You know, so what kind of choices do we really have? You know, that derangement syndrome, Trump derangement syndrome, is making these people so crazy that they really can't see clearly what's in their own best interest. They want to go a different direction from what? Because they just don't like him. And I don't get. You know, if Obama turned the world around and we were having a booming, everything was going great, I'd say, give the guy another term. You know, he wanted to save the babies instead of killing the babies. Give the guy another term because he'd be doing a good job. But that's not the case here. That's not the case here. What is it that we want? We want America to be a strong, healthy place for all of us, for every American, everywhere, right? And how are we going to get that? Which candidate offers us the best chance at that? I think it's pretty clear at this point. Donald Trump is that choice, whether you like his tweeting or not. I'll be back in a minute with round two here of Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, Most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Chasing Justice with me, your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I am thrilled to have you all out there. It's really great to know how many people are out there. You know, your tweets and the emails and all the contact is really fantastic. But what's that? You want to know how can you tweet to me? How do we connect? It's easy. On Twitter, it's @PangaroGlobal. @PangaroGlobal. Very simple. Go on there. Follow me. I'll follow you back. We could tweet back and forth. You can tell me what's going on with you. We can talk about things. Sometimes I'm considering having some of these people come on the show. So if you'd like to be on the show, follow me. Be my friend. Tell me what you got to talk about. Let's bring your voice to the nation. See, that's the blessing here of America Out Loud, is that it brings so many different voices to all of us. You know, right through the app on our phone, the radio in your computer, you can hear America Out Loud anywhere, anytime. And then there's all the podcasts. It's really an outstanding voice for just about anything you want to talk about, anything that you believe, whatever. There's a show here on America Out Loud for you. You know, I'm thrilled that you come here every weekday at 3 o'clock and join me on Chasing Justice. And it's been a great ride. I'm really enjoying it. Now, I did want to tell you about something that I've been doing. Now, I know many of you who've been listening for a while, and believe me, I really appreciate that, know that I have a company called True Security Design, and our company is dedicated to safety and security. I teach in schools, I teach businesses, religious facilities, summer camps, you name it. I teach them how to be safe and secure. We do threat assessments on buildings. We do student-based threat assessments to teach people how to identify potentially dangerous students so we can intervene before they hurt themselves or anybody else. Well, I tried to put together some kind of a manual, something I could put together for people that not everyone can afford to hire somebody. There are thousands and thousands of school districts that just don't have the money or the wherewithal. And the people in those schools deserve to be just as safe as everybody else. You know, it's unfortunate they don't have the money. The government should come up with more grants. That would be a good use of money, government money, right? To make sure that these schools have grants for safety and security. So if your district doesn't have money or doesn't do enough, I'm saying, how can I write something that you can get easily and inexpensively that can guide your school district to being a safer place? Well, I've created a book called Securing Your School, all right, by Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. It's available on Amazon right now as an ebook. So you go to Amazon.com, you put in Joseph Pangaro, Securing Your School, boom, it pops up right there. It's $2.99. It's an ebook. It tells you soup to nuts what you need to start considering to make any facility secure, really, you know, from the outdoor and the front door, right through to the inside, the electronics you can use, the way you can secure your school, the training you should do for everybody. It's all in there. I put everything that I have in there to get you started. So if you have no other way of making your school safe, you're not sure where to go, the people don't have money, they don't have the knowledge, get this ebook for them. It's $2.99. I couldn't make it any cheaper. And then give it to them here. You know, we're trying to turn it into a regular book, hopefully in the next couple weeks. But it's right here on the AmericaOutloud.com platform. If you go into the books section of AmericaOutloud.com and you look for Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, you will see my book, Securing Your School. And there's a link there for you to get it from Amazon. So go take a look. Get it for somebody where your children go. Get it for your church. Get it for your synagogue. Get it for your mosque. Let's secure every place. And if this can help, I'd be thrilled that you people out there could enjoy this thing and save yourselves from potential danger. Right? Because we're all in this together. We're all in this together. So, all right, that's what I want to talk about right there. So I'm looking at this primary season. Primary season is fully upon us now, isn't it? I mean, we are now in the full throes of primary season. the year, you know, it goes really fast. It goes really fast because as the weather starts to change and we move through the seasons and you have springtime and then summer, how awesome is summer, but how fast does that go? We know summer goes like lightning. We've had a pretty good winter. You know, I don't know where exactly, you know, how it was by you, but here in the Northeast where it's usually gray and rainy and miserable and snowy and horrible for weeks and weeks and weeks, we haven't had that bad of weather. You know, haven't had that bad of weather. It's actually been passable. We could get through it without much heartache. Not a lot of snow where I am for the first time in many years. But I'm out in my yard the other day and I'm working, you know, cleaning up, getting ready, because I'm just feeling good. The weather's been nice. The birds are chirping. The robins are showing back up. It's really cool. And I see the plants bursting through the ground. You know, these little flower plants are starting to come through. Daffodils are starting to pop up. We have a set of Easter flowers we had gotten. My kids, the older boys, Joe and Alex, had gotten for their mother, you know, years ago. They're like some kind of bulb thing. It's not a tulip or anything like that. It's another kind of bulb flower. But it comes up early. It's really beautiful. And by Easter, the flowers are usually up. They're pink and yellow. Really, really gorgeous. And it's always a bellwether for me that the spring is getting here. Well, I'm out there cleaning up. And what do I see breaking through the ground but these beautiful flowers? Now, the next mark that I'm looking for, because I do have these, you know, these benchmarks of where we are. Here in the Northeast, and maybe by you, we have these frogs. They're called peep frogs. At least that's what I call them. They show up in the first couple of weeks of spring. Sometimes it's early March. You know, the earliest one was March 9th that I remember. We had a really warm season. And the latest one was probably like March 28th a couple years ago, and we had a really cold, nasty winter. But these little frogs are in there, you know, they're as eggs under the ice, and they're hanging out there, and then they turn into their tadpoles. When you get like two really warm days, not 50s, but maybe high 60s, we get a couple of those in the spring here, the weather change, you could just feel it. A couple of days at a high 60s, and that sunlight hits that water, and them frogs burst forward, and it starts out, you know, just a little peeping in the distance. Peep, 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 peep. You hear them out there. The pond where they are is probably a mile away from me. And if you stand there on a quiet, cool night, and you're listening, you can hear the peep frogs in the distance. But then by the next day, if it's warm again, there are masses of them. Thousands and thousands of them. And you can hear it fill the night. It's like a song. You know, you hear these beautiful creatures of God singing. Hey, and that always tells me, you know, if the flowers are coming up and the frogs are singing, then spring and the nicer weather is at hand. Because I couldn't believe that God would let those frogs freeze to death once he let them be born. Okay? That's just my belief. Now, that doesn't mean we haven't had cold weather, and we still could have some cold weather. But I think once those frogs pop, and I look for it, so my family all knows it, my kids all know, they want to know, hey, Dad, is it frogs yet? Because every year I put it on the calendar, and then I go to December, and I write the date that we heard them, you know, March 28th, so that I know my new calendar, I can start looking for that date. I compare it. It's a little crazy of a thing that I do, but it's nature, okay? So I'm letting you in on a little background stuff with Lieutenant Joe. My bigger point is that the season of the primary season is brand new, and it's exciting, and we're going towards something new. Very reminiscent of the plants bursting forward and the frogs coming out, and that's what Easter's all about, right? There's this bursting through with religion, that the spring is renewing us, and there's new life ahead, and there's wonderful things going on. And I'm looking at this primary season saying, we started with how many Democrat candidates? And now we're down to a very few. We know Pete Buttigieg, he jumped out. Amy Klobuchar jumped out. Tom Steyer jumped out. And we're left with, you know, Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe Biden, as our president calls him. We got Elizabeth Warren. And we have, you know, what's his name? Bernie, right? We got Bernie still. So we're seeing closing of the ranks here. I think what we're seeing is the Democratic Party, I think, is scared to death that Bernie is going to be the nominee, and they are going to do everything that they can legally, illegally, properly, improperly, within the rules and regs and with outside the rules and regs to get rid of him. I don't know if they can stop him, though. Have you noticed the energy for Bernie? It's really amazing. He had a lot of energy last time, and Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party really nosed him out with that whole, you know, superdelegates thing. Well, he won the primary in that state, but she gets the superdelegates, so, you know, she gets all the points. I think they're going to try and do that again because they are scared to death of actually having a socialist, an avowed socialist, be the leader of the party. Isn't that something that those of us on the right, the conservative side, have always accused them of really being, you know, since the 1960s, being socialists and communists in hiding? And they denied it, they denied it, they denied it. How do you deny it when the standard bearer of your party, the guy that you are promoting for president of the United States, is an actual socialist? You can't really deny that anymore. And I think they're afraid that a lot of people, even, you know, some good Democrat people that are out there, that are not, you know, they're not these liberal left-wing nuts that are, you know, these radicals. They're just people who have always believed in the Democrat Party, that they were there for their parents and they were there for them. And they're seeing this coming and, well, Bernie's the guy. I think they may be a little rattled by having Bernie as well. Because I don't know that after, especially I would think some older people, having lived through the World War II, you know, and that generation, and then seeing, you know, the Cold War and this whole thing that we had to go through with the communists and the socialists and Venezuela and all this stuff that we're seeing, I don't know they could bring themselves to say, I'm going to ask for that. You know, a lot of people sacrificed and died to get rid of that kind of stuff. And I'm going to push a lever to ask for that. I think they're concerned that they're going to be blown out, like a 49-state blowout without him. And which would do what? Give Trump an unbelievable mandate, which they, imagine the heads exploding all across the country. Their heads would just pop if Trump had a 49-state win, right, after everything they tried to do to him. But I think that's the problem, and I think a lot of the deep state on the left is really concerned that once they get that moniker, man, they, you know, this guy was a nice guy to go out there and bash Trump, but if he's going to be the standard bearer, I think they're trying to figure a way to get rid of him. You know, how do they get rid of him? So this is why I think you're seeing the Klobuchar, Steyer, and Buttigieg getting out all within very short period of time of each other. I think some phone calls were made in the background. Hey, listen, you have to get out. This isn't working. We have to unite our forces against Bernie. And the best way to do that is either, you know, everybody show their support to Joe Biden and see if we can, you know, make him to be the reasonable guy, or to, I don't know, maybe go with Bloomberg or something. But it seems to me that they're doing some strategy. Now, I'm not going to say there's something wrong with that. I'm going to say, as a party, they're doing the right thing. They're trying to figure, how can we put ourselves in the best position to win this election? That's what they're supposed to do. You know, that's what the Republicans would do. If we have these candidates, who's going to be our best candidate? And as you go through the primaries, that's the purpose of that, to see who the most people want to vote for, and you put him up as your candidate. That's what we did with Trump. He was an outsider. We wanted him. But isn't Bernie also an outsider? So when you see, like, a Joe Biden has 32 people at a rally, and he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy that's going to beat Trump, and he's 32 people. Then Bernie has a rally, and he literally has thousands of people cheering, screaming, you know, Bernie, waving communist flags, you know, the flag of the Soviet Union, all that. Which is amazing they actually do that at those things. But he is an outsider also. So I think the Democrats are just as sick of their deep state for different reasons, but they're just as sick of it because all they do is get promised things. Look at all the constituency groups in the Democrat Party, their coalition of all these different groups of victims that come together, and the Democrat Party promises them every 4 years, this is your year. Vote for us, support us. You're going to get everything you want. Everything's going to be great. You're going to have all the money you ever wanted. We're going to give everybody everything they want. I think they're getting sick and tired of being sold a bill of goods and then getting nothing. You know, they're taken advantage of. I think we see that a lot in the changing poll numbers for President Trump in the African American community. You know, our brothers and sisters in the African-American community have been told year after year after year that the Republicans hate them. And if the Republicans are in power, you're going to suffer. I mean, they actually have ads where they're saying, you know, black churches are going to burn. Like Republicans are going to go down and burn the churches. This is what they tell them to scare all these people. And it's not right. These are American citizens, and you shouldn't lie to them like that. You should say what's in their best interest. And I think a lot of our brothers and sisters in the African-American community are starting to say, hey, wait a minute. I've been promised this junk all this time, and I've gotten nothing for my vote. You know, Trump said when he ran the last time, what do you have to lose? Give me a try. And I think a lot of people did, and I think they see the same thing the rest of us see. The economy is booming. There are jobs available for everyone at every different type of work in the world. There's jobs available now. We have a million more jobs available to us than there are people to take it, right? So I think we're seeing that switch over. Now, the polls have been consistent now, a bunch of polls, showing, you know, 25 to 35% support for President Trump in the African-American community. That is huge. Most Republicans will get 3 to 5%, maybe 6% African-American vote. To get 25 to 35%, that's sending a groundswell message to everybody. You know, we're all in this together. What is our best way forward for all of us? You know, we can't stand in these tiny little only for me constituency party things. We have to look what's good for the whole country. And what's good for the whole country is for the economy to be booming, that there be jobs out there, that the military be strong, the country be strong. That's what's good for everybody. Doesn't matter who you are in this country, that's a good thing for you. And I think a lot of people are starting to see that hey, wait a minute, you know, they're making up all this stuff about this guy, but and it turns out none of it's true. You know, we're still waiting for that shoe to drop, Mr. Barr. At some point, any point, could you come out with your investigation and tell us what happened? But that's for another attack in this situation. But the reality is, I think we're seeing that, and I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to see it because, you know what, I've always known that this side really wants what's best for everyone, wants to pump everyone up, wants to see everyone do well. You know, that's part of what conservatism is. And people, why are you a conservative? Because you hate everyone? No, I'm conservative because I love everybody. I love people. I want to see every family do great. I want to see every person get educated. I want to see every person be able to take care of their family. You know, that's the beauty of America. And how do we get there? That's always the question. That's what the question comes down to every time. What's our best way to get where we're going? So I can repeat this over and over and over again. I'm not against our friends on the left. I'm against their ideas. And if they come up with better ideas, I'll come right on this airwave and I'll support their ideas. I just don't hear better ideas. You know, taxing people to death, regulating people to death, controlling people's lives, deciding who can do what, that is not good for freedom and liberty. It's not the right way to go. It's a problem for our country, and we should not sit by and let it happen. So I'm going to leave you in this segment here on that note. What is best for you and your family? Which is the better way forward for you? The conservative vision or the liberal vision? Which one works out better for you and for your neighbor? I've made my choice. Have you made yours? We'll be right back here on America Out Loud, the Chasing Justice program with Lieutenant Joe Pangaro.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, here we are in segment three, round three, ding, 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 as they say. Now, listen, my commentary today to you, as I sit here in my studio, and I'm trying to connect with everybody out there, I'm trying to see through the the things that go on in the day and try and understand, you know, our place in the world and all that. So, and I don't always like to just do politics all the time. So I throw other stuff in. I got a lot of emails from people on the bit we did with all the presidents talking to Bernie Sanders. Some of you loved it, thought it was really funny. Some of you thought it was kind of stupid. Just trying to be a little entertaining once in a while. So I appreciate your commentary, though. Let it keep coming in. Now, a couple of things and I want to talk about for a second. That's a little off the beaten path, but I did see something really cool where there's a federal judge that has now said that Hillary Clinton must sit down for a deposition and talk about her server and her emails and all of that stuff. Isn't that interesting? Now, obviously, she can try to move to quash that subpoena so she doesn't have to go. But the judge has opened the door and said, I think it's Judicial Watch has subpoenaed her and wants her to come in and testify. And the judge, if you read the judge's comments about it, the judge says, yes, she may have answered some written questions about what she did, but she never really satisfactorily answered all the questions. Isn't that what's bugged us all along? How does she do something that would put you in jail? Could you imagine that? If the IRS called you up and said, listen, you run a business and we want you to bring all your emails down here that have to do with, you know, we want all your emails. Just bring them all, your computer, bring everything down here. And you had 50,000 emails. And then you went through them and you picked out the ones that could really get you in a lot of trouble and you deleted them all. Then you cleaned out your hard drive. You got rid of your phones. You took everything out of it, everything that she did. And you show up at the IRS and you go, here you go. Here's 12,000 emails. You had 50,000 emails. We want all those. Oh, well, I went through them, and I took out the ones that really wouldn't be of any relevance to you. Those were all personal things. So here's the ones I got, and here's what's left of my phones, because, you know, I just wanted to smash up my phone. Do you know how fast they would whisk you away to jail and put you in a cell next to Roger Stone? That's where you would be. Now, the fact that she got away with that, and we really still haven't dealt with it, and I don't think Mr. Barr has the guts to go there to reopen that case, because that's as simple as that. They didn't charge her, so it's not double jeopardy. What they had is they came to an investigative conclusion, which was prejudiced and inappropriate, which anybody can see from a mile away. All he would have to do is say, you know what, I'm appointing this prosecutor, and we're going to reopen that case, look at all the evidence we've already gathered, gather whatever else evidence we need, and we're going to see if she did anything wrong. I don't think he has the guts to do it. I don't think that's in the cards. I think they're hoping that the Clinton situation just kind of fades away. So I don't know what we're actually going to see that from Mr. Barr. But Hillary Clinton does have to sit now for this deposition, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. You know, how many times can she say, what does it matter at this point, when they're asking more pointed questions, and she has to answer, and they're not her friends in the Obama administration asking the questions. I think that'll be interesting. Okay, so that's really what I wanted to talk about, politics. Now, I saw something really cool the other day. You know, I'm a fan of space and outer space, and, you know, I like all of that stuff, and I like to think about it. We actually did a show here not too long ago where we talked about the contemplation out there. But they're getting this deep radio signal that's repeating itself every 16 days. Now, we know in nature, you know, there are really not a lot of straight lines and 90-degree angle movements in rock and stuff. It's all random, you know, because of random movement. And outer space, there are radio signals everywhere in outer space because of all the electromagnetic activity that goes on in the galaxies, around the planets, and the suns and the stars. But it all comes in as random. You know, there's no patterns. Patterns are what helps to delineate intelligent communication from just random bursts of energy that, you know, happen as energy happens in the universe, right? It's just like if you heard somebody just babbling on, you know, somebody that's really not got their wits about them, and I don't mean like Joe Biden, but something like that, just babbling on, it makes no sense. Then you hear someone give a very concise, to-the-point speech with facts, figures, and timelines and everything. You say, wow, that's an intelligent speech. What's the same thing? When you get a pattern of electrical impulses from space that are radio waves, you have to consider, first of all, is that from an intelligent source? Is that someone trying to tell us something? Now, we might not be able to pick it up. They say that the best way over huge distances like intergalactic travel would be laser communication. But you know what? You don't start out with laser communication. You start out with more rudimentary kinds of communication. It becomes very sophisticated, and you work on newer and newer technology. Right? So we think about at the speed of light, you know, how fast a radio signal travels. Travels at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. With that in mind, how long have we been broadcasting radio? What, 100 years? Right? Broadcasting radio for 100 years, telegraph, television since the 1940s, maybe the 1930s, we've been broadcasting radio. So those signals are really only, 70, 80, 90 light years away. They're not that far. We don't have a lot of, we could see that far away. We know there's not a lot of civilization out there. So even our stuff we've been broadcasting all these years is just zipping through space, which I like to think, the I Love Lucy show, when she's trying to get all those candies off the belt and she shoves them in her mouth and down her shirt and all that. That is out there somewhere, just flying across the galaxies. And it'll take years and years and years before it would reach anyone. The person on that end would get this choppy signal, but then it would become a pattern. And then they could see, wow, there's something in this. There's a signal here. Then they would have to build equipment to decipher that particular signal. And then they would see Lucy sorting candies and they'd say, wow, where'd this come from? So that'd be interesting. So I find that amazing that these signals are out there and they're repeating every 16 days, kind of like a distress signal that you would think of. It sends its message out and then it stops, it reboots, and it sends the message again for whoever would be listening. So is this radio burst every 16 days? Is this a greeting? Is this a warning? Is this a call for help? Or is this just a some other civilization trying to reach out to us, saying, hey, we're here. Didn't we send, the Voyager 1 and 2? We sent them with a plaque and a radio, not with a radio, with a recording of the sounds of Earth. Now, that's been flying for 40 years, right? But I think it's probably only doing 16 or 17,000 miles per hour. All right, so anybody who knows better, you can certainly let me know the speed. But it's 17 to 20,000 miles per hour. Those Voyagers are going for 40 years. They just barely left our solar system, right? They just barely left the solar system. That's how long it takes, right, for these things to get going. So the idea of aliens coming and, probing Clem and then flying back, I've always been a little skeptical of that because I start to see these distances. These distances are huge. How do you get here? Now, any one of you out there could immediately say, well, Lieutenant Joe, if they're that sophisticated that they can get here, they probably found ways to use wormholes and bend space-time and all that. You're probably right. Could you imagine if telling a farmer in 1803, we're going to have a watch on our hand that you push a button, you can make a telephone call, you can call somebody, you can get the internet on your phone that's on your watch. They would have no idea what we're talking about. They would have thought you were nuts. You can't do that. First of all, a watch, you have to wind it up. There's no way to talk to people. How do you talk to somebody who's not right here? They would have thought we were nuts. We always have to remember that. Technology is limited only by the mind of someone who can come up with some new technology and think of something and then make it happen. How else do you come up with these ideas? How can we talk across long distance? I don't know, maybe put a wire. How do we get the message across? Could you do that right now if you had to? Could you make a telephone system? No, we couldn't, but somebody could. The technology is written down somewhere. You could recreate it. But there's new technology. That's what's amazing about us humans. We sit around and go, okay, we need to come up with something for that. That's the mother of invention, necessity. How do we figure this out? The coronavirus doctors, they got a new virus. First thing they have to do is break it down to its constituent parts, look at its DNA, see if it's reminiscent of anything else, figure out how it lives, how it functions, how it reproduces, how it attacks the human body, how it gets in, how it stays there, and then they can figure a way to maybe stop it once they understand all that other stuff. On a microscopic level, microbiology, could you imagine that? These are things that in the last 100 years, 120 years of our civilization, because it's, we're actually moving along pretty quick now. In the last 120 years, from 1900, my grandfather was born in January of 1900. And the world that he lived in was probably what he thought the most modern place on earth. You know, he was in the New York area. They had, streetcars. They had street lights, you know, lamps or whatever. They had big, giant buildings. I mean, these big buildings, they had the trains everywhere. They probably thought they were living in the heart of technology. We look at that now and we call that what? That's the olden days. Well, at some point, you know, as long as the electricity stays on, that's an important thing for us in our age of life. As long as the electricity stays on, the technology is only going to get more and more impactful on our lives. How much technology do we use now? Every single day. You have a smartphone. You can listen to this program on your smartphone. You can get a radio app. You can go to the podcast thing. You can do calculations on your phone. I was thinking of that the other day. How many things are in your phone that we used to have to carry around separately? Right? Didn't you used to have to carry a phone? First of all, you need a phone. Now, on your smartphone, which is really a computer, you have a phone app on your smartphone computer. But you had a telephone. You had to carry a separate camera with you. You had to carry a calculator with you. You had to carry a flashlight with you. You know, you had to carry a typewriter so you could write things down. The list goes on and on and on of how many things the smartphone alone has replaced in our lives. You know, you can watch video and movies on it now, streamed in your house. Does anybody still watch VHS tapes? No? We don't really watch them. You can't even find a player anymore. You know, they're like in a vintage store. And they were the biggest thing in the world. Remember that when that first came out? You could record sound and voice and picture, and it was in color, and it was synced, and it was great. You got a picture of your kid in third grade doing that stupid play they were in. You can't watch that now unless you send it to somebody to have them digitize it for you so you can put it on your computer. Even the idea of computers, how far we have come. You know, I remember my wife Kathleen and I, when we were first together, our first purchase we were going to buy, we were young, we were 20 years old, and we said, what are we going to buy? We're going to buy a Atari video gaming system. You know, so we could do Asteroids, and we could play those games. Some of you remember what Asteroids were. Asteroids, Pac-Man, Mrs. Pac-Man. And you hooked it to your TV, and it was in color, and it was giant. And you had these Mario Brothers. We were doing all of that. It was brand new entertainment technology. Now, I was never a gamer guy. I mean, I kind of lost it after that. I was busy doing my life and my career. But at that point in my life, this was such new technology. It was like having the arcade right in your living room. And Kathleen and I would eat dinner, we'd sit down, have a cocktail, and we'd play Mario Brothers for a couple of hours. It was fun. We look back at that now. Remember Pong, where the ball just going back and forth and you could manipulate the ball on the screen by moving your paddle? It was absolutely amazing. You know, the first computer that we got. I remember when I went to the Detective Bureau, and in 1986, I became a cop, and in 1990, I went into the Detective Bureau. And they had a computer that we wrote search warrants and stuff on. And it actually had a floppy disk. You know, actually a 6x8 thin disk that you put in the computer. And that's where all your information was. And you could type on it. Which was so different from my previous experience with a computer. When I was in high school, I graduated in 1980. When I was in high school, I took computer programming. And you know what we did? We punched out cards with a card punch. So that the computer could add 2 plus 12 equals 14. And you put a stack of these cards that took you forever to type out. And you put it into this thing to make this computer do the calculation that you wanted it to do. When I was sitting there with a game system in color, making things move, it was absolutely amazing to me. Now look at the technology we have. We don't use VCR anymore. CDs were the biggest thing after records. Now you had a CD. Cassettes were so amazing. Cassettes were absolutely amazing. Now you had this tiny little thing you could put in your car. We had 8 tracks. How many of you had 8 tracks? Right, but you had 8 track. You could put that music in your car. It was so cool. Then it got small to cassettes. Then it went to the discs, and you could put a ton of music on the disc. Now, we don't use discs anymore. Everybody streams everything. Your car is connected to the internet. Your car is connected to the internet. It could send you messages. Time to change my oil. Right? How does a car do that? Your refrigerator can send you messages. Your doorbell has a camera in it, and we have almost everyone has one of those assistants that sit in your house and you say, Muriel, turn the lights on. Muriel, put on America Out Loud. Muriel, order me socks, right? We live in this age where we don't think technology won't be better tomorrow. Previously, all of that technology came as a surprise. We had no idea that Star Trek gear like that was going to end up in your home. Now, don't we all expect the next best thing? How come it can't be faster? How come my internet is not faster? It's taken 2 minutes for this dictionary to download. I am so sick and tired of waiting for this dictionary to download. It should go faster. Isn't that amazing? What will the future bring? And I think that's an amazing thing. And I say that as long as the electric stays on, because everything is powered by electric energy. If that electric goes off tomorrow, we're back to 1805. You better know how to churn butter, because everything in our lives is digital, is technology driven, and without it, we're back to 1805. So it's amazing time that we live in, where we anticipate even greater technology tomorrow. How about, we talked about the coronavirus, how about a thing like heart disease? Heart disease took my father at a very young age. I've been scared of it my whole life, so I try and do the right thing so I don't have heart disease problems. But I've been hearing for years these cardiologists say, you know, eventually we're going to have a medication that's going to go in and it's going to dissolve the plaque in your lungs and in your arteries and remove it so you don't be dying of heart attacks anymore. They're getting close to doing that. There's people working on that. There's people trying to figure that out, figure out every disease known to man out there. There are people working on it. It's really amazing. Human beings are amazing that we have this intellect, that we have this ability to look down the road and do something better. So what I really was thinking about here when I saw the spring coming, it's starting to get ready and primary season is here and we all have choices to make. We have to decide where we want to go as a people. Well, use this spring, this coming time of renewal and rebirth and energy to figure out who are you? Where do you want to go? What's the best way to get there? How can we all be better people? Right? This is what chasing justice really is all about, because justice is really in everyone doing what's right for each other and living and having a great life. So listen, I love being with you here today. I'm looking forward to our next time. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'll see you soon on Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. And by the way, go listen to the other shows. You'll love them all.